Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
Shout out to Frankie for continuing to not listen. But as we always say, you should listen because today, Debbie is joined by Nina King. Nina is the Senior Deputy Director of Athletics for Administration, Legal Affairs, and Chief of Staff at the University at Duke University. But more important to today's episode, she's also the chair of the NCAA Women's Basketball Committee. That means she is the head of the group that will select, seed, and bracket this year's women's NCAA tournament. I found it interesting that Nina and I have a similar background, as we were both student managers, she for the Notre Dame swim team and I for Ole Miss women's basketball. But that is where our similarities end, as she has a degree in accounting and also a degree from the Tulane School of Law, while I barely made it out alive with a degree in journalism. But I digress. Listen as Debbie and Nina talk about what goes into the selection committee process, what part COVID-19 and constant scheduling, shuffling, and changing will play, conferences possibly naming their own automatic bids, regardless of tournament play, conference tournaments, things like that, and whether or not fans will be allowed at tournament games, and just more from the overall process of getting us from Selection Monday to the Final Four in San Antonio. This is the episode I believe every women's basketball fan and basketball fan in general should enjoy. And as always, here's Debbie.
Nina King, the name on the tip of everyone's tongue when it comes to NCAA women's basketball right now is the chair of the D1 Women's Basketball Committee. Nina, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Debbie. I'm really excited to be here and talk women's basketball with you today.
Well, let's break it down. Let's talk a little bit about hoops. So first, before we get into the nitty-gritty or one of those terms that you guys like to use, where did you fall in love with the game? I know you were at Notre Dame, and I know you didn't compete as an athlete, but you certainly have competed as an athlete in the past.
Yes. So undergrad at Notre Dame, and I was a student manager when I was there. And so really was able to be around a lot of sports. Student managers kind of get deployed to timing swim meets and working basketball practice and shagging footballs. So that's really where I kind of developed the love of sport and figured that I wanted a career being around student athletes, the coaches, the folks that are so passionate about this really exciting endeavor. And so obviously we had the great Buffett McGraw there and was able to spend some time with her during undergrad and figuring out that this was the career for me. And so went to law school after that. And after I finished, I'll never forget, Buffett called me and said, "We have a job opening at Notre Dame, come back." And so I did and really enjoyed my time with everyone there. And how can you not fall in love with women's basketball when you're around greats like Buffett?
Well, there's no question, unparalleled success at Notre Dame by Muffet McGraw, and such a great ambassador for our game still, as she paves the way in a different direction to try to make sure that she uses her voice for the right reasons. How do you want to use your voice when it comes to this women's tournament?
Well, we're in a very exciting and unique year, and so I want to use my voice to make sure that we're representing the interests of the student athletes in creating a very, very unique tournament and representing the women's basketball community in putting on a first-class tournament and experience for everyone, all of the constituents relative to women's basketball. So it's exciting, a little bit scary as we wade into uncharted waters here. But we've got an incredible committee. The NCAA staff is so dedicated to making this work. And it's a really collaborative effort across everyone to make what's going to be, I believe, a spectacular experience in a new way.
So we've got all these new challenges and these new things, and a lot of them are COVID related. So let's just knock that one out. Let's just talk about the COVID situation, the pandemic, the San Antonio, the potential for the greatest challenges that you face as chair of the D1 committee to try to get this tournament put together in San Antonio.
there's a lot. How many hours are we here for?
One.
You know, I mean, it's going to be interesting this year when we're selecting teams. It's certainly not going to be apples to apples. Just tracking on how many games teams have completed, how many they're on track to complete. Are we going to make the 13 game minimum? And when we sit down actually in mid-March in the selection room and we're starting to compare teams, it's going to look very different. And it's going to be a challenge. That's the beauty of 10 committee members. We're all coming at it with different perspectives, placing weight on different things, and arriving, departing the committee room on Monday, on Selection Monday with a field of 64 teams. So, you know, we're tracking on who's on pause, how many games have they missed, watching a ton of games, and noting, you know, is a team playing after a 21-day hiatus, and how do they look? Are they rusty? That kind of thing. You know, tracking on injured players, but also COVID-related, which is something new this year. So very different. COVID is impacting us in so many different ways. But like I said, we're up for the challenge. So we'll figure this out.
As someone who follows the game intimately and talks to a lot of coaches, I know that one of the big questions that always comes up from them is, you know, we always know there's like 16 pieces of criteria on a normal year that you can use to evaluate a team. And this year there's more than 16, I'm guessing, unless that you've found a way to trim it to some sort of scientific, you know, revelation here that is going to come forward, that you guys are going to just say, you know what, we're going to use these pieces of criteria and this is how we're going to do it. What I know you've got 10 members, I know it's not apples and apples, but what are some things that you could say to the coaches that would make them feel at ease that they are for sure being evaluated at the highest level?
Sure. Well, first, if there was a scientific method where we could just kind of snap our fingers and say, this is it and check it off, we wouldn't need a committee, right? And so, yeah, I mean, we have a long list of criteria. None of it has changed. The only new piece of criteria is the net has replaced the RPI. But we're still looking at all of those things on the list. Availability of talent, common opponents, head-to-head, non-conference record, which is there for some teams there's going to be none, for some teams two, and for some teams maybe four. Again, it's going to be very different across all of the teams, but where I think the most important part is going to be the observable component, watching games and watching how teams are competing. Again, are they coming off a pause? Is there a reason that you know, players are not available? Is it COVID or is it injury? And so I think, you know, to kind of help coaches feel better, know that we are watching a lot of games. We have in the past, that's nothing new. But I think this year, watching a little bit differently and with a little bit different perspective, to kind of understand some of the nuances in the season.
Nobody is more excited than me about the S curve. Honestly, you know, coined the phrase the G-curve geography. It's been a point of contention in some ways across the landscape of seeding and selecting the tournament. Without launching into the Sweet 16 to X spot, not just Vegas, just having the format change, we're kind of forced to change the format this year. So we're forced with the S-curve instead of the G-curve. And I'm pretty excited about it because I think our game deserves it. I think our players and our coaches have improved and the level of play is so good that it deserves to have a balanced approach to how we see the tournament. So with the S-curve in play right now, and you're talking about the eye test, to me, that really makes the job more challenging for your committee.
Definitely. I agree with you wholeheartedly. The good thing about the S-curve, the bracketing piece will be done quickly, right? We'll be able to put teams into that S-curve and then we're done, selected, seated, and bracketed. Whereas in the past, we had to move teams around with an eye on geography and minimizing travel and, you know, creating those exciting matchups in 16 different locations. for the first two rounds. This year with the S curve, you hit the nail on the head. Seeding is going to be extremely important. There still are other bracketing principles that we'll have to follow as we seed or bracket with the S curve. You know, things like attempting to keep conference teams from meeting until the regional final round. So it's not like we'll take 1 through 64, put them on the S curve and say, okay, ready, go. We need to make sure that other principles are still followed. But it's going to be difficult. I mean, you know, who are the best, the 4-3 seeds and the 4-4 seeds and just kind of keeping moving down, going to be a challenge, but I'm excited to see how it does all shake out and just see it differently this year as we, you know, have before in the past.
Well, I'm excited to see it also because I think it's going to create an tournament from that perspective. You know, nobody has a geographical advantage. Nobody will have a geographical fan advantage. It's going to be really a nice advancement for our game. So I'm looking forward to watching that. Let me take you through a couple of scenarios, not to pick on anybody, but just to question this part of the process. You know, I'm looking at like Conference USA and traditionally, Rice and Middle Tennessee have been the top two teams. They don't play each other this year. I think that's really unusual and odd. Why wouldn't they play each other? And the second, and how that affects the bids out of that league. And then secondly, you know, we had a situation where Iowa decided, not Maryland, but Iowa decided that the student athletes experience, the safety, the protocols, going to travel to College Park, Maryland, to play Maryland during the inauguration when the Iowa men had played there earlier that week right after the insurrection at the Capitol. So how do you evaluate, like, what if Maryland and Iowa don't get to play again? And what if the Big Ten deems that's a forfeit? You know, how does that affect how you go about strategizing a team like Iowa, who is an NCAA tournament team, who has one of the best stars in the game in Caitlin Clark? I mean, there's a lot of factors here to look at. There's a lot of stuff and scenarios like that, Nina, that are perplexing and complex and layered. How do you deal with some of that?
Yes, complexing, perplexed, and layered. You know, I think first and foremost, we can't hold any sort of decision that's reflecting player safety and welfare concerns. So Iowa deciding not to travel to Maryland is certainly something that we don't want to be a negative on Iowa. You know, but it is a conversation we're going to have in the committee room. When we're missing that head-to-head competition, the Rice versus Middle Tennessee, and in a typical year where we would be able to see those two play, and data and metrics around that game, as well as maybe in a typical year, the Iowa-Maryland matchup. So I think those are conversations that we're going to have, and why we might be in the committee room a lot longer than normal this year, because there's just going to be so many questions. It's really hard to answer right now, you know, as you pose the question, Debbie, because it is January and it's something that we haven't had discussions around before. It's going to be a meaningful discussion once we get into the room.
Nina, let's talk about conference tournaments now. I want to break this down into a couple of components. One is, could this be a year where if teams opt out of their conference tournament and the conferences are responsible for reporting who their automatic qualifier is, could there be a scenario where this year some conferences say, you know what, we're going to let our regular season champion be our automatic qualifier. We'll still play the tournament. We might have less teams. We might protect our top seeds that we know are going to be ones, twos, or threes in the NCAA tournament. We just know in advance. Could that be a scenario that could happen where a conference could say, like the ACC that you're a part of, could say, you know, if Louisville or NC State wins the league, we're just going to make them our automatic bid, and maybe they opt out of playing in the ACC tournament?
So all conferences need to let the NCAA know by February 26th their process of submitting their either automatic qualifier or conference championship or conference champion. And so that's something that needs to be determined before conference tournaments will happen. So it could be different for a conference this year, their process, than previous years. You know, maybe the ACC is going to say regular season champion is the automatic qualifier from the league, but that has to be made known to the NCAA by February 26th.
Okay, so that could be an option this year, and that could be really interesting to see how that plays out. The second part of it is the timeline with which conference tournaments are played, predicated on typically when the start of the first, second round is. So there's a lot of conversation that some teams fear that if they are in the protocol after the tournament, that they won't be able to quarantine long enough to be able to play first and second round. And we're not waiting for them. Like, the conference tournament happens. The NCAA tournament is going to happen. If your team's not available or you don't have all your players, it's too bad, right?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we haven't figured out what the model is yet for the tournament. We know Selection Monday is on Monday, March 15th. And then after that, not quite sure how it's all going to look. We're also working backwards from the Final Four. We know those dates are going to be Friday, April 2nd and Sunday, April 4th. So we're going to hold a tournament between Selection Monday and Sunday, April 4th. What that looks like and what those dates are, not quite sure, but we certainly wouldn't penalize a program for not being able to quarantine, jump into protocols in enough time to be able to participate in first and second rounds.
That's very interesting, because that, if you work backwards from the NCAA Final Four, then you could come up with a timeline that would protect teams so that they could play and all could participate in their conference tournament, even if they played until their last day, would still have time to quarantine. So I've had some coaches say if the tournament did work backwards from the Final Four, and instead of 3 weeks, it shrunk to two, which seems economically to be a better model to manage in San Antonio to me and the outlying area, whether it's Austin or whether it's San Marcos or, you know, the areas that, you know, has been rumored that the NCAA is looking at. That to me seems like that would protect the conference tournaments, and you would actually be able to hold them. So how do you make that decision? Like, is that a decision where people like yourself representing the ACC and the chair of the D1 has to, you know, come together with the NCAA and figure out what's the best for the game? How do you decide that?
Absolutely. Come together with the NCAA as well as with our television partner and figure out what this all looks like and how we can effectively, efficiently, and obviously with health and safety at the forefront, pull this off. And so I think there's a lot of different opportunities that we can do this. There's a lot of different ways we can do this. We're looking at all of the models, and we will figure this out in the coming weeks, what exactly it looks like.
It seems like, since you and I are talking here, we're always talking ideas. You know, I have a great open line of communication with you to share whatever I'm thinking. And, you know, one of the things that I really like is the fact that we would work backwards from the Final Four. We would shrink the tournament to 2 weeks. We would only keep teams in that bubble scenario for 2 weeks if the student athlete experience is, you know, what we're looking at the forefront. But we know that sometimes that, for me, that's lip service, you know, like I try to tell my kids I care about their academics. You know, it's just kind of a funny thing that we say. I really care about the game. I care about, you know, putting our game and showcasing our game at the highest level. If the windows worked with the television partner, which is ESPN, that seems like that would be a good idea. Let me ask you about this, because we're talking about the student athlete experience. To me, our student athlete experience has evolved beyond what the color of the carpet might be at the site. Because that is a conversation that I've actually had with administrators at the NCAA about their experience, student-athlete experience. So let me ask you in this way, Nina. The 15s and 16 seed, not with respect to those coaches or those leagues, but the teams that get seeded 15 and 16, we had one anomaly in the women's game where a 16 beat a 1, but we know 15s and 16s aren't going to beat 1s and 2s. We just know they're not. If we were going to really enhance the student athlete experience, and since we're in the pod right now with San Antonio, why don't we just put the 15 and 16s over here and let them play their own tournament? Let them have experience where they can actually win. Let them see if they can stay longer in the postseason. Let those teams build their programs a little bit and not get on television the 40 and 50 point blowouts that we end up having. And then we seed one through 14 in each what would be considered four regions inside the bubble. What do you say to that? Like just separating those out, because on the men's side we have 68, so they have a play-in. And it's not necessarily a play-in. It's actually an NCAA postseason tournament. They're underneath the umbrella of the NCAA tournament, but they actually get a chance to win.
Debbie, I love talking with you, and I love your ideas, because every time we talk, you do have some great ideas, and we have good dialogue and exchange back and forth. I love it. I mean, obviously we want these student athletes to be able to play the game that they love and to keep going and have a meaningful experience. Obviously the week before, well, in a normal year, they likely have their conference tournament. Don't know this year what that could potentially look like for teams that are 15 and 16, if they would even have a conference tournament and that opportunity. So, thinking outside the box and thinking in different ways, especially this year where we can kind of almost do anything under the cover of it's a wild new year, let's try new opportunities. I like thinking outside the box, and I really, that's a very interesting idea that you pose, and certainly something that we could talk about.
I think it would be great for everyone to get the postseason experience. They're still going to be on television. It's just that they have an opportunity to compete and actually win. And I think it would be good, and it keeps the ones and twos from injury and keeps them playing at a high level with a more competitive game, where you might have to give a one, in a bracket that would have 58 instead of 64. Is that right? Yeah. That'd be eight teams. Yes. Then you would, you might have to give a bye to the one seeds or the two seeds, but I still think it would be a reasonable opportunity to at least investigate it a little bit, because it sounds to me like it might be fun. Okay, are we going to have fans at the Final Four? I mean, do I need to buy my college teammates a couple of tickets, or should I pass on that? And if it's just Girl Scouts, I was a Girl Scout. Do I get a free pass for that?
Yes, bring your former troop. I don't know the answer to that question yet. I mean, obviously we're still exploring and investigating if San Antonio is our one geographic region. And so then we've got medical protocols to work through with the county. And if we move out into other counties in Texas, we need to work with those health professionals. And so there's so many layers and so many details. Obviously, we'd love to have fans. The fan experience really makes for a great, exciting competition, but just not sure, can't answer that question at this point.
Okay. What about this one? Because, I'm always trying to figure out an angle. I should have taken that job a long time ago at the Citadel as the SWA, so maybe by now I could have eventually been on the D1 committee. I love our game so much, and I respect the coaches and the players, how hard they work. And our game is at such a high level right now. It's amazing to me what some of these athletes can do, how well we score. And my shtick is always about offense, Nina. I care about offense because it's entertaining. People want to see scoring, ticket-selling players, shoot till your arm falls off, all that stuff that I talk about. It's not to discount defense completely. I mean, I know it plays a role, but under overhead trap, ice jam, switch, or the variation on ball screen defense, who cares? If you can shoot it, you're going to beat a good defense, okay? Having said all that, we have an opportunity to really think about things differently, as you said. Now, as chair, you have a responsibility, and you have some things that I know that you have to do as a chair. But what are some other things that maybe you could do to put your stamp on this particular experience? Because we're fortunate to have somebody as smart and as connected as you to be able to be running the tournament right now.
Thanks, Debbie. Appreciate your kind words. Like I said, I think this is the year where we think outside the box. I mean, we know we're not doing things like we've always done, and we shouldn't rest on, well, we've done this like this in the past. And so when we're having committee discussions, committee meetings, you know, we're constantly talking about different ways of doing things because we have to, but also because why not? And how do we continue to grow the game? And how do we continue to make sure that women's basketball, NCAA women's basketball, is on everyone's radar, and folks continue to talk about it and be interested in not just the championship, but in women's basketball all season long. And so, you know, relative to me, this is certainly not about me and my stamp on the game, but rather the NCAA Women's Basketball Committee, our Women's Basketball Oversight Committee, along with the NCAA staff, and how we collaboratively, collectively impact women's basketball. So an exciting time, but as a committee chair, I am guiding the committee to not rest, that we need to continue to talk about new opportunities and new ways to go with women's basketball.
There has been years in the past where people have talked about having like an outside group. You know, there's a lot of us in the game that aren't members of an NCAA institution. You know, I work for ESPN, so I don't work for a school. And you have to be a part of an NCAA member institution to serve on any committees inside the NCAA, unless they put like a task force or a separate group that is like an ad hoc. So what are the chances that maybe because the eye test is so important this year, and there are those of us that are studying the game all the time, there's a handful of us, not a lot, there's a handful of people that are 100% dedicated to studying the women's game. What's the chances that some old coaches or some broadcasters or some executives at ESPN could actually have a role in helping you with the tournament, in seeding and selecting?
Well, have your phone number.
We've all been through the mock process.
Yeah. Well, I have your phone number, so maybe we can have a standing Tuesday morning meeting, and you and I could have some dialogue on the teams and what's happening in women's basketball. You know, yes. You and several of your colleagues are so well versed in what's going on. I mean, you live and breathe NCAA Division I college women's basketball, and your knowledge is incredible. And I think certainly something that we would love to tap into, and that we do tap into, just in unique and different ways. Committee is, as you noted, made up of folks that serve in the membership at Division I institutions. Credit to Lynn Holzman and her staff for exploring different ways how we can use the women's basketball community. You know, at the Final Four last year, unfortunately, we were set to have a great stakeholder summit. There was one held the year before in New York, where we're gathering input from so many around women's basketball, and not just college, but WNBA, USA Basketball, the media, just getting everyone around the table to have meaningful conversation about women's basketball. In addition, the media advisory group that Lynn and Rick have put together, I know you all haven't been able to meet a lot, just kind of given COVID and all of the interruptions, but what a great idea to get all of the media members that really have an interest and passion in the game around the table to talk about women's basketball. And so maybe some ideas can grow out of that on how to continue to keep folks outside of the committee engaged and participating in meaningful ways.
Yes, I get a chance to serve on both of those committees that you, and I'm up for a Tuesday morning call every week if you want to do that. I would love to do that. What's the most fun part about being the chair of the D1 committee? There's got to be something that's fun. I mean, it's all work. I mean, and I know the volume of work is extensive and maybe complicated this year based on all the issues and challenges that we talked about, but there's got to be something that's fun. What's fun, Nina?
All of it. It is a lot of work, and the day to day and just kind of our day jobs as well, and especially in this challenging year, is a lot of work, but it's really fun work. I mean, certainly wouldn't be here and wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't fun. Having an opportunity to watch, you know, teams from around the country watch throughout the season, but then once we get to the tournament and to see those student athletes and just the pure joy in being able to participate in an NCAA championship. championship. And then, of course, once we get to the Final Four, watching that happen. And our last Final Four, which was 2 years ago, was in my hometown. And I grew up in Tampa. And so being able to experience that, all of it, it's really an incredible, incredible opportunity. So I would say all of it's fun. I'm going to remind myself of that as I stress trying to catch up on games and as we pedal towards March 15th. It's all fun.
Yeah. So with all that fun that you're having, what's the chance that we could shorten the selection process to a day and make it on Sunday instead of Monday? You know, you're talking timeline, or you might have more time coming off the conference tournaments to have with our television partner. Maybe ESPN would consider something that, you know, the men have selection Sunday, and then ESPN's programming is all about the men's tournament. You know, maybe there's some options there to consider as a change of instead of selection Monday. Because, you know, for me, that's one less day for a fan with disposable income that has to wait to see based on the geography principles. Now we don't have that, and we don't even know if we're going to have fans. But if we do have fans, that allows us even more time if we consider a change there. I know it's another. I mean, I'm like Christmas morning waiting for the bracket to come out. But, you know, what do you think about that? Selection Sunday or even another week?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, so just kind of weighing the pros and cons, if you package it together with the men's selections, does it get lost in the shuffle? You know, having one dedicated day to women's basketball selection Monday, where ESPN is talking about women's basketball, hopefully all day on that Monday, you know, gives it a little bit more to the women's game and not packaging it and you know, kind of maybe minimizing it if you're putting both on the same day. Not sure. You know, but again, an interesting out of the box idea and certainly something to think about. We couldn't shorten selections. You know, we hit the ground running as soon as we arrived traditionally in Indianapolis. As soon as we arrive, get into the meeting room, papers spread everywhere, start early in the morning and go through the evening late at night often for several days. And so I can't imagine getting the process done in one day. There's just so much to talk about. And then there's three distinct processes, the selection, the seeding, and the bracketing, and each one just takes so much time. So I would advocate for longer and more days, although, I mean, we do all have time constraints and couldn't be in Indianapolis for too much longer. But we are deliberate in the process and want to give it as much time as it requires because, the teams deserve all the discussion that we have in trying to figure out who those 64 are.
So let me switch gears with you and throw this one at you. Do you ever watch Scott Van Pelt's Bad Beats?
No. He's on TV for me.
That's terrific. It is. And you know what his Bad Beats is, right? It's a take on a betting line that maybe went south at the end of a game where, you know, somebody didn't cover or did cover based on some crazy shot or some crazy ending. And it's a really interesting segment. It's very popular, and it's very popular because there's a lot of people that gamble. There's a lot of people that spend money. And I know the NCAA stance on don't bet on it. And, you know, I say this every time I think about the don't bet on it video. I think college women and men need safe sex, responsible drinking videos. That's what they should be watching when they go to college, not the don't bet on it. But as a mother with three boys that are in college, that's what I wish they were watching. You know, I bring that up because states are legalizing sports betting. It is a huge multi-billion dollar industry. And we have lines on the WNBA games. Every WNBA game has a line, but the college games on the women's side, they don't have any lines till we get to the tournament. So in Division 1, 2, and 3 on the men's side, they all have lines. And I'm interested in this as a component to grow our game. And here's how I see it. I just know the conversation that takes place in my house with all men. You have all men in your house too. Now your boys are younger than mine, but you know, the red zone, how they consume the product, how they watch sports. They know the lines, they know the spreads. They're not betting. They're just playing fantasy football, but they're aware of what the spread is. So it makes the game very interesting and entertaining at the end. And that's why Scott Van Pelt has been able to make a huge success out of his bad beats on late night television. So the reason why I'm saying that and bringing this up is because if we have lines on our women's games, and I'm not advocating gambling, I've never bought a lottery ticket. But if we had lines on the women's games, people would pay attention. They would eventually have an awareness. They would watch. If they're watching, we'd have some more ratings. And if we have ratings, we can sell it. So it all to me is that demographic and that piece that we really, if we embraced it and welcomed it as a part of our game, not advocating drinking or smoking, you know, gambling is another thing that's out there. It can be considered a really bad habit. Drinking could be considered a bad habit too. But I'm thinking for the overall growth and development of our game, I see it as something to really push our game forward. I know what it does in the WNBA because I know people that pay attention, and it has helped the WNBA grow because people are watching. What do you think about, I know you got a Duke hat, I know you got an NCAA hat, you got a couple of things here. Just give me the Nina King, you know, with how much you care about the game and what you think about this proposition.
There you go, outside of the box ideas again. You know, the Nina King perspective really isn't a great one because I unfortunately don't pay attention to lines and gambling. You know, the way that you posed it, it certainly it sounds good and makes sense. And I was going to ask you, I mean, is there evidence that it has kind of propelled and helped the WNBA move forward?
I mean, I don't have the data to give you that, but I just know that when you're in Vegas and the lines are up on the sports book and people can see those, gamblers will spend money on it. And now you're going to be able to do it from your home in your respective state. And I just think it creates another level of awareness, especially that 18 to 48 year old male demographic that we know the ones that are spending the most time following sport.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think we should be open to continually growing the game and in new ways because we have to kind of keep contemporary and keep moving. And with so many states introducing gambling legislation, it certainly seems like a way we can kind of keep up with new rules and new laws moving forward. Who do we call? How do we get lines on college games? I don't even know where we start there.
Well, ESPN has a partnership with the William Hill Sportsbook that they developed in September. And so I think that's one place that we might be able to start. I can't speak for ESPN. I'm just speaking as Debbie right here, just somebody who's, you know, interested in that component of it, because I think there is some element of sales and creative inventory that would allow us to move the game even more forward, just get more people paying attention.
Yep, and that's
all. If we get a bad beat on Scott Van Pelt, we would be doing something. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate goal. I mean, how can we continue to get people watching and talking about college women's basketball? And the gambling piece, and how do we do it, and who do we call, is Nina King talking, not Duke NCAA.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't put you in that spot, Nina. I wouldn't put, because I'm wondering, you know, with Kevin White announcing that he is going to retire in August, does that put you in a position to potentially be the next athletic director at Duke University?
Well, you know, very happy for Kevin, a 47-year career in college athletics, and it's so hard to imagine college athletics day-to-day without Kevin White in it. Thankfully, we've got Danny White at Tennessee, we've got Mike White at Florida, we've got Brian White at Florida Atlantic, and Mariah White at SMU. So the White family impact, Kevin's impact and the White family will continue to be felt in college athletics. And I'm just so grateful to Kevin for everything that he's done for me personally in college athletics. So don't know what's happening here at Duke. We'll see. We're all very excited for a new chapter in Duke athletics history, but very grateful to Kevin and the legacy he's leaving behind.
Kevin has always been known as a great leader of people. He has commanded respect everywhere he's gone. What are one or two things that you have learned from him that you could share that we all could learn from?
Sure. And something that he's always told me is to be yourself, be comfortable in your own skin, operate authentically and within your own skin. And something that I try to remember as I tackle each day. And then secondly, treat people how you want to be treated. I mean, I think those two pieces of life advice, not just professional advice, are great things to kind of keep and hold on to each day as we try to navigate this tricky, scary world.
I have to admit, he's the only athletic director's office that I've ever been in that has a treadmill in there. And I think he has two.
Treadmill and a bike.
Yes, I knew he had two pieces of fitness equipment in there. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know any other athletic director that has a treadmill in their office and a bike.
Yep.
Nina, anything else for the good of the cause? I'm keeping your NCAA hat on here, not your Duke hat right now. So anything... You know, anything for the good of the cause as anything you'd like to add as we finish up our time on Nothing But Net?
Well, we covered so many things today, and I think I'd just like to reiterate, I mean, this is a wild year, but it's going to be so much fun, and hang on with us, and we're going to figure this out. We're going to have a spectacular tournament for the student athletes and the programs, and while everything looks crazy and different, we just have to hang on to sticking together and making a wonderful tournament and crowning a champion on April 4th.
It sounds like everything that you said, we don't have a lot of timelines in place. We don't have any definitive timeline for decisions. We do know that we are going to have a Final Four in San Antonio, and we do know those dates, but the rest of it seems like you guys have a work in progress, and it sounds like you're tackling it the best you can with the best intentions to try to put the best product on the floor that we have. And I know the coaches and players are doing their part. You guys got pressure on you to do yours.
Yes, prep for the challenge.
Thank you so much, Nina. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Debbie. It's been fun.
As always, you can send in your questions to Debbie at the email address askantonelli@gmail.com or by using the hashtag askantonelli on Twitter. You can listen to our podcast at Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and TuneIn. You can find all of those ways to listen by visiting our Linktree links. It's in our bio on Twitter and Instagram @MBN with DA or in the description of this podcast below.